Everybody, thanks for tuning into this episode. On this one, I'm going to be talking with my buddy Eric Barber. I've known Eric since 2015 when I got an internship at Midwest Whitetail, and we've been friends since. He works at Vortex Optics now, and he lives in Wisconsin, so I don't see him as much as I once did, but we stay in touch throughout the season. We usually have long conversations on the phone, and on our last conversation, we started talking about paying attention to the fine details of things and just really focusing on every moment of the hunt. And we were kind of talking about how that kind of separates, you know, inexperienced hunters from experienced hunters. The guys that have a lot more experience typically tend to be paying attention to the small details within the hunt. So in this podcast, we're going to talk a lot about some situations that we maybe weren't paying attention to detail as much as we should have been, and some of the times that paying attention to detail can help you, whether you're hunting, whether you're practicing with your weapon, whether you're in a setup, whether you're on the move. There's a lot of problems you can prevent by paying attention to detail when you're hunting. So speaking of practicing with your weapon, I recently was shooting some of my rifles, and I was thinking about how it's weird that we practice with hearing protection, but we don't always have good hearing protection while we're hunting. And as you probably know, a lot of hunting rifles are pretty loud, and that kind of got me thinking about silencers. If you're like me and you're interested in protecting your ears, check out Silencer Central for a smarter, easier way of buying a silencer. Silencer Central is the creator of a revolutionary process that's simple and makes sense, that begins with paperwork, without the work, and ends with Silencer Central delivering a silencer right to your door. Check out the link in the description of this podcast to learn more about Silencer Central's easy buying process at silencercentral.com. You can also call the phone number listed in the description as well, 888-988-8179. Also included in the description of this podcast are links to some of the products that we use when we're out in the field. If you want to use some of the promo codes that are attached to some of those links, you can save a little bit of money if you're wanting to buy some of those products as well. Thanks again for tuning in. Hope you enjoy this podcast.
Yo!
Yo!
What's Yo! Up? What's a good word, dude?
Oh, not much, man. Just pouring some coffee, ready to do this. I think we should just go right into it, because that intro for you, when you answer, that's just incredible. That energy, that's what we need.
That's typically how these things go.
The head's looking bald, man.
Dude, there is literally nothing left on it at this point.
It looks good.
I mean, it's all I got at this point.
You're pulling it off. You know, it's always weird how, like, so I can obviously grow some hair, and I can't grow any facial hair. But then it's like everybody that I know that's bald has like the cleanest beard ever.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. If it wasn't for this thing, I would look like a Q-tip. Like, I would literally look like a Q-tip.
And that character does exist out there as well, but
it does. It does.
So what's
going on? Oh, man. I like the Skype thing. This is the video aspect.
Oh, yeah.
I like it.
It makes it easier for, you know, just to be more natural, I think. Ben and I do this sometimes, just hanging out.
Yeah, man. Heck yeah. Sometimes. How's Colorado right now?
Just a little, I don't know, just like a little slow, just off season. I mean, I'm happy to be hanging out with Whitney more, but just like slow from the standpoint of like doing a lot of the computer work and that type of stuff, like, wears on me, as it does at all THP. You know, we're all, like, Aaron called me the other day, and the first thing out of his mouth was, "Cabin fever yet?" I'm just like, "The hell yeah." Like, yeah, absolutely cabin fever. Like, this is the time of the year where it just, I don't know. I get a lot of enjoyment out of working out. Like, that's what I look forward to every day, so.
Yeah, I've been trying to really get back into it here lately. My sister's getting married in October. And if I can be down to 185 or 180 by October, that would feel good.
Yeah.
That would be like my senior year of high school weight. And I feel like that would be a good clean weight for like my size to be at. So
I saw a picture the other day from ATA 20.
Dude,
it must have been 2016. We both looked like hell, dude. We looked way different.
Oh, absolutely, man. I remember jumping on a scale at that time, and I looked down, and, like, I hadn't jumped on a scale for probably a good 4 years. I jumped on that thing, and I looked down, and it said 217. I'm like, oh, my God, dude. I'm destined for heart failure.
That was at the peak of the sweets days, too.
Yeah, dude, Casey's cookies and donuts every day.
Oh man, I remember some days where I remember a day when we were working at Midwest Whitetail that we straight up went to. I think we went to like Casey's and then we went to the Hy-Vee and then we went back to Casey's and got donuts every time.
And just slugging copious amounts of coffee, just an unhealthy amount.
I mean, that's still
bunch of guys.
That's just, still happening.
Just zapped up on sugar and caffeine, eating donuts, drinking coffee, and making videos.
Yeah, yep. Pretty weird times for sure.
Times were simple, man.
Oh yeah, it's funny you said that about 217 because right before Midwest Whitetail, so like 2014, I was all the way up to 225. I'm all the way back down to like, I'm floating right at like 177 to 182 right now. Like that's kind of my, and that's about where I played football at in high school. So like, I feel like I'm in about as good a shape as I was then, you know, and
perfect, man.
It's funny. Like, one of the things that, you know, I don't know if you feel this way, but, you know, for me lately, hunting has become so much more of my sport. Like, I was actually just talking with Ben and Keith, and, like, since we were watching the Super Bowl, and it's like, since I stopped playing football, you know, there was a little bit of time there where I didn't necessarily put, you know, my love for sport into hunting, but like really, especially the last like 3 years, you know, the physical aspect of it has gotten so much more as a part of it for me. And therefore that like motivates me to get, you know, in better shape. I know that's not for, you know, necessarily everybody, but like to me, that's what I love. If I can walk just 3 miles, like I'll just do it just for fun. Part of it is the workout, right. You know?
Yeah.
But
totally too. And like, you know, if, I mean, when we were in that, in Nebraska on that muzzleloader hunt, like we were walking 14 miles a day, you know, seven in, seven out. Mm-hmm. And like, I want to be able to do that.
Right.
I mean, there's no way that a lot of people, even like our age that I know, like would be able to do that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And you don't need to be like a Hulk to do that. You just got to be healthy, you know. That's
I mean, you got to just not eat donuts at three different stops in the same hour.
Exactly.
Just like making
funny how that works out.
Yeah, making little decisions like that, and I mean, just doing some sort of movement. You know, like my whole agenda for working out is just like something is better than nothing always. I mean, obviously, if I can do a good hard workout, that's ideal. But like, sometimes just going for a walk, as silly as it is, like that is a big,
right.
I mean, it's similar to what you'd be doing hunting anyway. So it's just like a realistic workout, but yeah, I mean,
exactly, man.
I do like multiple workouts throughout the day though, just so I can stay sane. Cause I'm not a sitter, you know, doing a bunch
right.
of sitting.
Oh, dude, there's literally nothing to do right now, you know?
Oh yeah. That's the worst part. That's what, you know, it's either just sitting, like I move from the computer to working out to the computer to working out to computer, and you know, and then I go to sleep and then I do the same thing, and it's just day in and day out, same monotonous schedule. And like, you know, when you travel and hunt so many months out of the year, doing repetition actually is just weird, you know?
Oh yeah. For sure, man. I noticed the same thing when I was, I don't know if we even really talked about this, but when I hunted Missouri, I did that hunt kind of like solo. Hayden, trimmer actually stopped down for like the second half of it, I would say. But the first, like, you know, I think there were 3 days there where I was by myself. And, like, you're only on your own time. Right. And it's weird how much, like, your senses kind of, like, get heightened. You, like, you know, you kind of disconnect. I didn't have, like, really any cell service down there either. So, like, and I it was weird. Like, I actually thought I would hate that. Like, I legitimately was, like, a little concerned that I would kind of, like, lose my mind. You know, like, I'd kind of freak out that, like, I wouldn't have anyone to talk to. And, dude, I loved it. Like, just that sense of, like, literally nothing. You know, you are on your own time. And if you want to, you know, go and hunt all day, like, great. You don't have to worry about it. You know, I mean, I just checked in with Chantel and, like, you know, as I would get service, hey, I'm safe. Everything's good. You know, if you can give me a weather update, that'd be sweet. But really, other than that, like, that's pretty much the extent of it, you know. And then it's funny because as soon as you're done with that, and this goes back to, like, what you said on the repetition thing, like, as soon as that's over, you know, like, for me, I went back to work. And, like, work is very Monday through Friday for me. And it was, like, just everything changed. It's, like, buzzing, watch is buzzing, phone is beeping, emails are going off. Like, it's crazy how much you actually reset and how fast you do it when you're out there.
Oh, yeah. And it's weird to me, too. The thing that always gets me about hunting, I'm still typically with somebody, but
yeah,
the weirdest thing is, and but I have, when I did go, like, I went in a full day and to some stuff in Ohio this year, didn't have service and was alone. And the thing that is so weird is how fast time goes. Like, you would think, like, oh, I don't have my phone. Like, what am I going to do? In my and you just are doing other stuff. It just takes up. I mean, I don't look at my phone ever when I'm hunting, other than looking at a map. Really, that's why I never text anybody back. But but it's like I just I'm always amazed at how quickly a day goes by, and all of a sudden it's dark, and you know, you're just like, man, that flew. Like, I can't wait till tomorrow, and it's just I feel like it plays into that, like, just like disconnect from everything. And then, when you go back and you kind of get in that schedule, it's just like, I don't like this. I don't know. I'm sure that probably hits home for tons of people. You know, it's just that's the beauty of hunting, really, is it's fun for so many ways. I mean, literally in the last 10 minutes, we've just talked about how you can use it for working out. You can use it for just a peaceful escape, completely opposite things, really, but just like, it's great for both of those.
Yep, exactly, man. 100%.
So I was going to ask you, I think last time we talked, so we've just been rambling here, but I guess real quick background, Eric and I talk at length on the phone when we do talk.
Yep.
So we were like talking about just some things that, you know, some lessons that we had learned, and we're like, well, why are we not recording this? You know, why are we not putting this on a podcast? So we were talking, Eric, you had told me the story of the buck, the big buck in Wisconsin. But then you were like, and then I haven't even told you, or maybe you did start to tell me, was there something else that you were going to tell me? Or was that like kind of the end of the season?
No, so I think like what,
I feel like maybe we even like lost a call or something. I don't even know. Something weird. Maybe you didn't tell me something.
Yeah. So I think like how it kind of like got brought up was you were telling me the Ohio buck story.
Right. Yep.
And then in talking about that, we talked about like the buck that snuck up over the hill when you had your bow, like, you know, off to your right or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then that's what brought up this Wisconsin buck.
Yeah.
And then, and we'll get into like that whole story, but then I think that also kind of like dovetailed into, you know, like just talking about like you hear this a lot, like when you're talking about anyone, like, oh, what makes this guy, you know, such a good hunter? What makes this person so good at what they do? I mean, if it's an athlete, like whatever that their area of expertise is, or professionally, whatever. And like, that's kind of where the conversation went. And it all, I think, kind of boiled down to like in your case, you know, like no plays off. Like that's kind of like the thing that we talked about, like literally just not taking plays off. And I know it's like sports analogy, but then that also that applies to like that buck in Ohio. Like that was one dumb thing where like, you know, you didn't have your bow right there and it bit in the butt. And then that same thing applies to that that buck in Wisconsin, and we can like we can get into that story.
So the example that Eric's using is when Keith and I were bow hunting in Ohio, and man, I'm still just. It's one of those ones that would have just been such sweet footage and such a sweet hunt that we, you know, and we were really like pumped about that spot. So it just still just pisses me off a little bit that I was like sleeping a little bit. But it was the one where if you watch the Ohio bow hunting videos from this year where we rattled and the buck came in and I had my bow facing the wrong way, which was just a massive mistake. And if you haven't seen that, I recommend it. It's pretty comical, really, because how silly I look and how silly of a move I made. But yeah, you know, I was kind of I was probably pouting a little bit to you on the phone more so than I am now. I was just like, wow, like kicking my own butt about it. And it's like, I don't know. It's one of those things that, you know, kind of spurred a conversation then just about like not taking any plays off. And then this story on top of it. So go ahead and tell your story, because it's a pretty funny one and just like, yeah, ties into the topic.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess to preface this is this all took place on opening day of the 9-day rifle season in Wisconsin. And, you know, everyone always says, like, when they talk about gun season in their state, they talk about, oh, the pressure's crazy high. And, like, you know, that kind of goes without saying. Like, especially in Wisconsin, we got a ton of hunters. We can use rifles. You know, it reminds me a lot of, like, what I hear about Missouri. I've never experienced it. But I mean, exactly, exactly. Like, very rich hunting tradition, a lot of people out there. So I hunted a piece of public in the morning and ended up, like, I got in a spot, sun came up, there were people everywhere. So I got back to my truck by like noon, and I kind of just started like cruising spots, looking for different areas to go. And what ended up happening, I guess, in the afternoon is I got narrowed down on this piece of public land, and it's a big chunk. But, like, what drew me to it is when you look at it, there's, like, nothing on it. Like, there's very few tree cover. It's mostly, like, cattle pasture. You get the occasional, like, CRP field and maybe a little creek bottom with a tree line that'll run around it. But for the, like, vast majority of it, it's just wide open, like, stuff that you would think you'd find pheasants in. Mm-hmm. And I guess even, like, to take it a step further back, like, when I first found the place, on that afternoon of opening day, I went in there and I kind of quick cruised the perimeter of the property. And this is at maybe 12:30 now, 1 o'clock-ish. And no one was there. So I'm like, sweet, this is awesome. I get in. And in the time that it had taken me to park and then kind of like walk up this hill and kind of come down and get the wind in my favor, it turned out where a father and like his two sons had came in and they did a drive. And right when I was about to walk down into the area that I was going to, like, you know, set up on, they just happened to be walking right through it. So I was like, all right, whatever, you know, sweet. Walked up to them and just kind of made small talk. And they're like, yeah, we're just pushing this out. Like, we're walking back to the road. I'm like, all right, whatever. So I just stayed put, let them kind of go on their way. And maybe 15 minutes went by. Literally, I was, like, looking at the map. I maybe walked 50 yards, and I'm looking at the map on my phone. I put my phone back in my pocket, and I have a Ruger M77. It's a 270. It's kind of like an old, like, classic, like, deer hunting rifle. Like, you can find ads of those things back in, like, the 70s and 80s. Like, it's been around for forever. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's unique about it is it has a three-position safety on it. So it's like one of those tank-style safeties where all the way back is safe. Halfway, like, cock is still safe, but now you can open and operate the bolt.
Right.
And all the way forward is fired. I had just, like, literally these guys just walked by, you know, I mean, right there. I put my phone back in my pocket. I took a step, and up jumps this nice buck. And I, like, quick get the gun up, and I kind of, like, fumbled the safety, and I, like, I didn't get a shot at him. So I'm like, shoot, like, in years past, when I was, like, maybe, I don't know, 18, 20 years old, I would always walk around. Whenever I was moving, I had it at the halfway position and thumb on the safety for that situation. Like, if I ever had to make a quick shot, it was just thumb forward, gun up, and bang, right. You know? But, like, as I've gotten older, I'm like, that's probably not the shot I want anyway, which I still, like, feel that way. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not, like, boo-hooing over this. So, anyways, the only reason I bring that up is that plays into what happened here next. So, like, bluffed that opportunity. I'm like, all right, well, that's, you know, I'm going to go to this little, like, totally, like, I know overlooked spot is almost kind of like a buzzword to an extent.
Oh, yeah.
But it was truly, like, a spot that I never would really think that a deer would be in. And at least on a normal day, you know, being that it was opening day, I figured deer might get pushed into this stuff and I might be able to glass something up or whatever. So walk over or drive over to this spot. Basically, the setup is the wind was out of the north. There's a big hill that's in this cattle pasture. It looks out into a CRP field. And then the CRP field goes for maybe about 500-600 yards. And then it connects to maybe this like 200-300 yard wide strip of timber. That's a big, long, narrow strip. I'm like, all right, I'm going to get on that and just kind of glass into the CRP. There's some cut cornfield on the private. You know, maybe I'll get lucky and something's bedded up in there. I walk over there and, you know, this gets into the no plays off thing. Like, the first thing that I kind of messed up on is I get set up. It's probably 3:30, you know, in the afternoon. And I'm thinking to myself, all right, like, I've got 2 hours here. Maybe I'll just kind of like kill time and, you know, just like casually glass this CRP that's underneath me. And I'm glassing it and not really like taking my time. And I spend time.
I got a quick question. Is there a sign of hunters going into this spot? Because I got it. When we told this story the first time, you sent me a pin.
Yeah.
So I've got it pulled up here. When you pulled up, were you like, I don't know, but he's been in here? Or was it just like, kind of your standard, like, yeah, I don't really know. It could go either way.
Yeah, no boot tracks, nothing.
Okay. Like,
so I'm like, this is sweet. This is great. And there were definitely hunters on the private to the east of where I was at.
Yeah.
I was on the east boundary of this property. It's a big square. And then there's more private over to the east.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, like when I was walking in there, no boot tracks. I'm like, sweet. There were also no deer tracks up on top either. So I'm like, maybe that's why there's no human activity in here. There's no freaking deer.
Right.
So anyways, basically there's a big knob that drops down into the CRP and I'm sitting underneath this big oak tree, like looking out into the grass. And you know, the edge of the fence where there's like, basically the reason that grass is tall inside the CRP is it's wrapped in a barbed wire fence.
Mm-hmm.
The cattle can't get in there, you know? So it's real beautiful, like grassland habitat. And glassing into that, I'm spending most of my time focused on the stuff maybe out there at like 200 to 300, 400 yards. I actually glassed it for quite a bit, probably like a solid 45 minutes just gritting it, you know? And, but again, glassing this stuff way, way out there. And I'm looking for literally just an antler tine, anything, you know? And so, like I said, 45 minutes goes by. I've got now at this point, probably maybe 45 minutes left in the day. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get down, walk into this stuff, cross the CRP and get over to that little narrow chunk of timber that's to the north.
Mm-hmm.
So I get down and now here's where that story of the safety comes into play. Like there's a barbed wire fence that I have to cross. And while approaching the grass, I had my gun kind of like, you know, off the sling, it's just in my hands and I've got the safety at the half cock position just in case something would have jumped up out of the grass. I would have had at least a crack at it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I get down there, I cross the barbed wire fence and, in doing that, you know, I put my gun on the sling and just hopped over the fence real quick, took it off the sling, and kind of started, like, took maybe like 5 or 10 steps out into this grass. And immediately, like it was that, holy cow, there is a deer in here right now. Like, it went from no deer sign to just, like, that feeling that you get right before, like, you jump a deer. You know, like, you just know there's something there.
Yep.
And so I you know, kind of, I'm just like, all right, there's fresh beds everywhere. There's droppings. I take maybe like 3 or 4 steps, and I didn't think that, I figured there was a deer there. I never in a million years would have thought that it would have been where it was. This deer was bedded probably 30 yards in from the fence, which now after like looking at it and getting in his bed after the situation kind of unfolded, it makes sense. But anyways, all of a sudden up jumps this giant buck and like the biggest deer that I've probably ever seen, you know.
That's what the pin says. I mean, like, shared. Biggest buck I've ever seen.
So like this thing gets up and he's like 20 yards ahead of me, you know, and he's just running straight away. Like I said, there are no trees. There is like, it's just wide open grass. Mm-hmm. Immediately in my mind, I'm like, oh my God, even before I got the gun up, I'm like, holy crap, I've just shot the biggest buck of my life. Like what could go wrong? Yeah. I get the gun up, safety off, perfect, get him in the scope, pull the trigger. The gun doesn't click, doesn't anything. Like the trigger just like pulls and like nothing happens. And I like frantically did the same thing again and expected a different result. Same thing happened. And then I like look. Because the trigger was the safety was at the halfway position, that bolt had gotten, was able to be moved and articulated,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was lifted up 90 degrees. So, like, obviously the firing pin isn't engaged. and this is all while this buck is running at Mach 10 straight away from me. So, slam the bolt down, and now at this point, he, you know, what would have been a 20-yard shot is now a 60-yard shot running full tilt straight away from me. And I shot at him 3 times and missed every time. And he ended up, he crossed the creek and then he popped up on the other side of this and got, and didn't stop running till probably out about like 500-600 yards. And I know some guys that are probably a better rifle shot are thinking to themselves, well, you know, why don't you just get on the backpack or sticks and shoot? If I was a better rifle shot, I would do that. Mm-hmm. Like this M77 of mine isn't that gun,
right?
You know, like,
right.
And he stopped, and I, like, got the binoculars on him, and I'm, like, resting the binos on my frame pack, glassing, just, like, hoping I can find, like, a lethal wound on this thing. And he's just standing there, totally unscathed, and he turns back, and he starts blowing and pounding, looking at me, and then he just kind of tucked his tail up and went over the ridge and never saw him again. And the reason I think that we bring that up, and it kind of like goes with what we're talking about, is the whole no plays off, right? Like philosophy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, had I just glassed that grass better closer to the fence,
yep,
when I went in there, you know, first of all, I probably would have seen him. If I would have had more confidence in the spot and even just not gotten up, he probably would have gotten up at, you know, later in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been an 85-yard stationary broadside shot.
Right.
And then even at that, like, once I got in there, you know, if I just would have confirmed things, like, go through that mental checklist, it could have been a very different story.
I mean, even from the standpoint of, like, maybe you walk in there and you start getting, you know, bucky. You get bird doggy, I guess. And you're, yep, sitting there, you're like, okay, there's definitely a deer in there. I remember the first time we talked to you, you were like, there's a deer in here, and in the next 50 yards, I'm going to see him. And
yeah,
it, yep, like, if that's the attitude, you know, maybe that's when you really pump the brakes and you really start taking that extra time to glass. Because I believe there's times where the deer know you're there, but will, like, just be hanging out. And if you can kind of get eyes on them while they think they're still hidden, you could pull off a shot. So, for example, we had a, here's a good example where I feel like more, very similar, more attention to detail and, you know, not taking, this kind of plays into not losing confidence. I guess we could just really use this time to just spit out a bunch of really good examples of, you know, this, these mistakes. Cause like, I'm sure we could come up with millions of them, but Logan Wright and I were hunting in Iowa 2018, I guess. And I was filming him and it was first gun season. So like there's a lot of pressure during that first gun season and the deer are hanging tight. You know, you can, same thing. You can expect there's been pressure, deer been pushed around. And we were walking in, it was starting to snow, pretty quiet conditions. And it, I wouldn't say that there was any explosion of sign. It was just like, you know, kind of that experience telling you like, yeah, that looks good right there. That looks like a place a buck would be. And I remember starting to really slow down and look. And, you know, I'm filming. I was so confident that we were close to something. I was actually, I just clicked the GoPro on thinking, I better have this on just in case something happens. And I actually caught, like, me saying, you know, hey, big buck. And I had just glassed over into the tall grass and I was looking in there and I could just see antlers sticking up. Mm-hmm. And that buck was just standing there looking and he had heard something, but he didn't know exactly what we were. You know, he knew something was not, well, I wouldn't even say he knew something wasn't right. He just knew something was there. And I mean, he very well could have just saw it was another deer or turkey, anything. Right. And we just kind of paused and just as antlers are sticking up and, you know, had you knew the way his body was oriented, maybe you could have shot down through there, but it just didn't seem like the right move. And he's, I mean, he's close. He's like 80 yards probably.
Yeah.
And we just decide to, I mean, we freeze, we don't do anything. We eventually, like, I think what ended up happening was, is he just kind of disappeared and we sat down and he was either right there or he had moved through the tall grass and the way, you know, he moved, we just lost track of him. Well, we decided the best idea was to grunt and shake some trees. And I thought the calling was very, very realistic and he didn't do anything. He didn't budge. We didn't see him. And it was like, man, like it kind of feels like he might've left, but like, let's just hang out. So we hung out and stuck it out until just about dark. I would say there's probably 30 minutes left, right about sunset. And I think we had kind of discussed the options. It's like, well, we could sit here until actual dark, but like as time ticks, like, you know, he's going to have to do a decent amount of walking to get out of that grass, or we could just go to right where we last saw him. And if he's there, great. If not, then, you know, we're probably behind him, but oh well. Anyhow, we start creeping down there and it's just a step-by-step ordeal. And, you know, at the time, like, I don't know, Logan was probably 20 years old. So like, I mean, you know, not like a ton of hunting experience. And, you know, I think we've all been in this similar situation where you're like, oh, there's no way in hell that deer's there. And you're just like, I'm doing it, but I'm half-assing it. And like, we were going down there and we were taking slow steps, but like, I think had you just been committed and been looking at that spot over and over again, I'm talking every half a step, if you're glassing and you're looking for any sort of sign of antler, at some point you're gonna see him. Cause like your binoculars do stuff that your eyes, I mean, well, no kidding, right? But like they put you in, they put you in the spot and like, you just can't even come close to seeing stuff with your eyes. Like I'm all about people using their eyes and, but I mean, man, if you have binoculars, at least have them with you, because a situation like this, like all of a sudden you're just like going from not being able to see into that spot to actually seeing the deer, getting an idea of where he's at, how his body's oriented, and getting a shot and knocking him down. But instead, we like got all the way to a point where all of a sudden I saw him with my eyes and it was too late. And I'm not saying I was doing any better, but following with the camera, it's harder, you know, it's a little bit harder to glass and kind of keep track of all things. But like, again, we had talked about this after the fact and broke it down together a million times. That's what we do. That's the benefit of hunting with a partner, is you got somebody there to say, hey, like, here's how I think we could have done this differently. And again, yeah. I'm not saying I would have done it any differently, but now I will for sure. I know I will from that experience, right? That like, even if it seems like we're walking, because we were walking in pretty open stuff right at this deer, I truly believe that if you had hit him with glass, got an idea of where he was, I think you could have probably pulled off a shot through the grass, but you needed to know where he was. And by the time I actually saw him and knew right where he was, it was too late and he busted and you ran out. We actually ended up seeing him the next day and got really close to shooting him the next day, right in that same area. But you know, that's one of those taken. I mean, we were taking plays off. I would say I felt like he was there more. And at the very least, I felt strongly that we needed to be committed to him being there, because like, what else are we gonna do? Like, this is it, this is our last play of the day, we got 30 minutes left. And I mean, maybe if we look up and we get eyes on him and he has moved out of there, we can make another play. But that was essentially like what we had committed to, our final move. So take that whole entire half hour, crawl to that spot, glassing the whole way, and that's not taking a play off, you know, because as soon as you see him, boom, you're on him. I mean, I think of that one as being similar. And again, hindsight is 100% 2020. I don't want anybody listening to be like, oh, like Zach's just sitting here saying he would have done it differently. Maybe I wouldn't have, but you know, I know now, learning from that experience, like, that's one that sticks out to me all the time. I mean, because of that day, I glass obsessively, even in hardwoods, dude.
Right. And that's, you know, there's a couple of things there. Like, the first thing, you know, from like a glassing standpoint, I think like that's a big thing, timber or like in grass like that, like as you know, go through that, you know, like you're changing your focus just like your eye would, but you're doing it such a more macro level. You're like layering almost through the different like layers of cover, you know, like you're picking apart the trees or the grass that's 20 to 40. Now you're doing the 40 to 60. Like, that's one thing. The other thing there too is like, you know, kind of how you mentioned that maybe like Logan might have like lost confidence in it or whatever. You know, that's something that I've definitely done myself too, and like even did just as recently as like this last spring. And I think with that though, like, one thing that a lot of people don't like, and this kind of even gets back to where we were at the start, but what I think many folks don't realize is like, when you're talking about like, okay, what separates this guy from, you know, most hunters, and you know, you'll be able to elaborate on this a lot because you do a lot of this, but most guys that are hunting 2 days a week, Saturday, Sunday, you know, and the occasional week off, they probably don't have enough time under their belt to really realize, like, okay, the situations that you really need to slow down and how slow you actually need to go.
Painful.
To make it. Yeah. I mean, and that's like the biggest thing that I always tell people, you know, whenever that, like my dad is a perfect example. Yeah. My dad, you know, he watches the stuff that you guys are doing all the time. And I mean, you know my dad, and he's like, what makes Zach so good? You know, and I what I always tell him is like, it's just how slow and how, like, literally, like, this next step, that's when it's going to happen. Okay, it didn't happen. Well, not then, it's the next step. And you are literally, and the guys that are really good at this are relaying that same thought process over and over in their mind until it actually happens.
Yeah, it's just a matter of experience though too, like you talking about when all of a sudden you hit that CRP field and you're like, oh, I'm going to jump a deer in the next 50 yards at minimum, you know, or maximum, like, he's here. It's something that, you know, I would say all of THP, you know, and you included, like, we've hunted a lot of years. Like, it's not, you know, I'm in my 20s, like late 20s. So I'm not a real, you know, I'm not an older guy, but I've hunted for 22 years already, 23
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
And, you know, been around it for a long time. So it's like, it's not something that happened overnight. I mean, we're talking decades of hunting to be able to know that this is the time to take the fast step and the yep. slow step. And I'm still messing it up left and right.
Right.
I mean, that's the other thing. And I love those mess ups in the moment. I always am mad and like, man, I'll piss around and be grumpy for a while. I mean,
yeah,
honestly, there's a part of me that if I really started harping on it, I could really get mad sitting here thinking about that, that bow being behind me. But
right. Oh yeah.
But I'm not going to do that again, you know, and you got to you got to keep those things in mind. And, you know, just some things that I think, I think about this one a lot. And this is one that goes for any style of hunting, like being aware. And this falls into your category of your situation, thinking about your weapon, like, where is your weapon in relation to everything around you, and how can you avoid from like getting hung up? And what I mean by hung up is like, if you go to draw your gun or your bow, is there something that's going to get in the way if something comes from any direction? You know, you have to almost be like expecting, you're expecting worst case scenario to best case scenario as soon as you get in your setup. So like, let's say you get in a tree stand. First thing I would want to look at is not the obvious spot. I don't want to draw my bow and just be like, yep, right down the pipe, easy. It's like, okay, where is my weakness? You know, where is the spot the deer could come in? And I am, you know, and here I'm sitting here saying that, and a couple of days after the whole bow behind me thing, or the next day, I think, had a big buck come into like 5 yards, just exactly in the wrong spot, and I wasn't ready for it, and I probably could have been. You know, I don't know that I would. That's a tough one. That was a really tough one to say if I would do it differently the next time. At the time, I was like, no, I wouldn't have done it differently, but I could have at least had more room for my bow. Right. So, like, when you get into a setup ground or in the tree, just moving that bow around in all different directions, because I don't care how experienced you are or I am, like, we're gonna mess that up again.
Yeah.
I mean, you could bow hunt or gun hunt, whatever, for years and years and years and years, you're gonna mess that up again. But if you're conscious of it, you're gonna minimize that number of times that you mess that up and have to be kicking your own butt for maybe a whole season, you know, maybe you make that mistake and that was your one opportunity. You don't want that to be you. I mean, I don't want that to be you. So it's like making sure you know where your bow is or your gun is, and practice, man, practice draw. Like, if I'm hunting with you and you're not practice drawing your bow or your gun, I'm like pretty stressed out. Like, I don't know that we're going to pull this off, because you don't know that little piece of grass is right there, and I can see that your bow is going to hit that if a buck comes in from the right. You know what I mean? It's like,
exactly.
That's the type of stuff.
Yeah. And I think like that goes like a lot of people that are, you know, maybe like just getting into hunting, or like, you know, still kind of like getting a couple of years under their belt or whatever. That's something that I wish I would have known sooner. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I feel like I kind of, from like a preparation standpoint, you know, you kind of set the, you know, in the whitetail world, you set up a tree stand, you know, if that's kind of your thing, and you think, okay, well, this is how it's going to work.
Yeah.
And if you really boil that down, like, how often does it actually work the way the stand is exactly set up for? Like, it can definitely happen, but it's rare and it's few and far between, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big one. And then too, like, just familiarizing yourself with stuff like during the off season, you know, like, you know, I'm just as guilty of it as anybody, but I sit out here in the front yard and I'll shoot it, you know, on level ground all day long.
Just like perfect posture and form. And you're just like, you're doing like the, you know, target archer out there. You're like getting all settled in, and that's not very realistic, right?
Exactly. I mean, you know, if you think about the stuff that, that ends up happening, like just, you know, thinking even back to Missouri this year, we had kind of like some rainy days in the back half of that trip. And we spent those days still hunting because it was like, you know, driving rain. It was super easy to sneak around. Mm-hmm. And we snuck up on a nice buck. And, you know, I shoot my bow out to, you know, 60, 70, 80 yards because I want to be really, really good at like at 40. Mm-hmm. You know, I always feel like if you can double whatever your effective distance is, that's a good thing.
Yep.
But we had this buck come through the timber. And I had to kind of like, I drew on him. He was just a little like, you know, four pointer. I wasn't going to shoot him, but I did draw on him. And he was like 33 yards. And I kind of was at this like half crouched position. And I remember thinking to myself, like, if this was like the buck that I wanted to put my tag on, like that would have required a lot of, you know.
It would have taken a good shot. A really good shot. Exactly. It would have been just like real natural.
Right. And like if you put a Glendale buck up here at 33 yards in the backyard, you would have to try to miss that thing. Like I don't know that you could consciously do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think practicing in those like uncomfortable situations and all that stuff, you know, I think that's huge.
Yeah.
And then even to take it even one step further, like if there's ever a situation, you know, where you're like you're cresting a ridge and you feel like you know, I feel like I should just, you know, do this or like if you're turkey hunting out, maybe I should, you know, call before I pop over this. You're probably, you know, your subconscious is probably correct.
Yes.
And you should just slow down and think about that because odds are you're thinking that for a reason, you know?
Yeah. The one fine detail that like, it still amazes me. I'll be with people and just like, I don't know. It's just one of those things. I've done it so much at this point. With deer and turkey and elk, I mean, and a squirrel, I mean, whatever, like literally everything that I hunt at this point, my favorite move in the entire world is when you know that you're breaking into a different section of terrain. Like when you're cresting a ridge that is going to have some sort of like different stuff that you haven't seen yet or your sound hasn't hit. So for example, hunting in really any of Appalachia, in more specifically Appalachia than like where you're at in driftless stuff, a lot of that stuff is like real spiny. And you can, when you crest, like you go from one side of the ridge to the other. So like recognizing and learning, and this is great off-season practice, go scouting and just go try to see deer in the woods during the off-season. But like, if you're coming up the backside of a ridge and then you're going to crest that ridge, like until you crest that ridge, you're in like a different world than what's on the other side of that ridge. It can't hear you. And if it can, it's very muffled and it certainly can't see you unless it's right on that crest as well. So as you're approaching that, you can go pretty fast. And like if you're picturing that crest right above you, I would usually say that I can be confident moving up the backside of that for, you know, a good ways until I probably get to about 20 yards. And then I tone it down a bit. And then at 10 yards, I tone it down again. And then, but I'm stopping every time too. That's another thing, stopping and listening. Because if you can hear something right over there, obviously that's to your advantage. And then like from there, it's picking a spot that last 10 yards. It's like, stay low. Get uncomfortable. I'm talking, let those legs burn. And this is where working out plays into it. It's like, get low, get your head up, and stay low, and just pick that next spot that you can get to that you can kind of stand up behind and look over that ridge. And like, as you do that more and more and more and more, you start to realize what you can and can't get away with. Maybe you didn't get low enough, and like, boom, deer bust. Boom, turkey stops gobbling. Whatever it may be, take note of that and don't just say, oh, don't make an excuse like, you know, oh, he just stopped gobbling. Think about why he stopped gobbling or I keep popping all these ridges and I'm not seeing anything. Well, maybe, or I'm seeing fresh sign like they were there or I saw running tracks from here. Like, what did I do wrong? Oh, they smelled me. Well, you know, really think about it because I think a lot of times, if you're not focusing on every little step in that situation, you are blowing it, but you get really confident the more you do it. And then all of a sudden it's like, man, coming over one of those things is like Christmas morning. You're just like, there might be one right here. And that's when you're doing that, from a still hunting standpoint, like that's another one that's really important. And I do it all the time. I don't care if it's in season or out of season. Like, I will not go over a ridge slowly. You know, it's like, or I'm sorry, quickly. That was stupid. I will not go over a ridge quickly. I always get to the top and I stop and I listen. And listening too, man, that's another one. Like,
yeah.
Big, big part of the strategy, I guess.
For sure. And I think a lot of it, once you do it a time or two, you start to be able to anticipate it. Especially in hill country, like you're talking in Appalachia or, you know, in the mountains, elk hunting, whatever.
Yep.
You know, or like a situation that I think back to is just this past December in Nebraska hunting the sand hills. You know, in the first full day there, we had, you know, really, really, really high sustained winds out of the west, whatever. And we knew that none of those deer were going to be bedded on westward facing slopes. They were going to be bedded on the leeward side of those ridges. And, you know, sure enough, that was the case. And after you start to anticipate that, you know, like little subtle things, you'll pick up on it. And then that just makes you that much more effective. Maybe going up over the top of the ridge isn't the best idea. You know, maybe I think that's one thing that a lot of people out in like open country specifically make a mistake of is they end up, you know, everyone thinks about that pretty picture of like the guys up on the ridge top looking out over everything.
Uh-huh.
It when you're out in Nebraska or, you know, any of those like wide open areas, think about how far you can see the guy that's out on that's silhouetted.
Silhouetted.
Like, don't be silhouetted. Yeah. You know?
Well, and that same thing happens even in timber, man. Like, it's really easy to, yep. I learned the hard way a lot this year hunting in Ohio. Like, geez, like we're getting silhouetted something. Like one time we were in a setup for, it was the same day that second buck came in that came in like to 5 yards off to the left and I didn't have a good shot or, you know, just couldn't get my bow over there. That morning we had set up, on the top, and I stood up because I was just getting lazy, and I was just like, I want to get a different vantage. And dude, as soon as I stood up, a doe and a fawn that had come in below us embedded, they were just far enough down that I never heard them or saw them. They immediately spotted my butt and took off. Boy, they were running fast out of there, and I was like, that's embarrassing, you know. So that happens in the timber too.
Oh, dude, I've got one on that note that is even more embarrassing than that. This past spring, turkey hunting, I up here in southwest Wisconsin, I was in an area where I had a bird goblin here, you know, one direction, and then the opposite direction, I also had another bird goblin. Well, the one, you know, whatever, let's just say that would have been sounded a little bit hotter and a little bit closer, so I kind of went after that one. Long story short, didn't kill that bird. Start walking back. I come to this ridge system where everything kind of comes together. There's a big break in habitat. It goes from like super high stem count stuff that got logged a couple years ago to like wide open, like oak timber, open oaks, and there's like acorns all over the place. Like, just literally perfect, you know? I'm like, that turkey sounded like he was close to this. He's got to be right here. So before I did, I popped into there. I yelped, you know, did a quick sequence on my slate call. Didn't hear a goblin. I'm like, how is that thing not gobbling? Like, he has to be right here. And it was about 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning, you know, getting to be midday. And I'm like, all right, whatever. Like, I think I had something to do. Or I was going to a different spot. And I'm like, whatever, I'm just going for it. And I walk another 10 steps, and I'm like, how? Like, again, I reiterated that in my head. How is he not here? He's got to be. I pull up my call again, yelp, real, like, aggressive, cut, pop, pop, and then, meow, meow, and nothing, quiet. I'm putting the call in my pocket, and I just happen to look. Dude, 18 yards in the wide open. Here comes the hen walking, like, right at me, and this big, like, it looked like something out of a movie, big full strut Tom right behind her, and my gun's on my sling, and I'm standing in the wide open. And I'm like, I start to get my gun off my sling. I almost pulled it off. I don't know if the sun was just hitting me perfect where they had a hard time seeing me, but I got the gun to about here, and then all of a sudden, boom, they were gone. But if I would have had the confidence in knowing that, like, okay, just because I didn't gobble, you know, or like just because I don't see them, see the buck right there as I pop over the ridge, you know, that doesn't mean he's not there. Yeah. Like, I'd rather move slow, take it nice and easy and confirm, you know, that way than have it blow up in your face.
I got one. I got one that is exactly like that. So if people are like listening to this and they're like trying to picture this, we have, I filmed this same situation almost. So we were in South Dakota, 2019 turkey season. I'm gonna even look up at the actual episode number so people can watch it, because it's a hilarious one. It's an underrated video. So Greg had bought a tag, and we were like in enough gobbling to, or like I had shot one, Ted had shot one, and we were still there for a couple more days, and Greg had bought a tag because we were in enough gobbling turkeys. And kind of the classic tale, you know, got off the road in the morning where we could hear a lot, heard one, start making a move on him, get up on the same ridge system as him. He gobbles a couple more times, and I even say something really hilarious to Sean. Sean was with us too, and I turned, you're gonna love this, I turned to Sean, I'm like, what do you think, or something, and he's just like, this is awesome. And like, it's a hard cut, and then it just, as soon as it cuts to like this clip of me filming Greg, and we just had heard the turkey gobble again, and we thought that he was like, you know, two saddles over. So it was like the saddle in front of us, it was like, oh, certainly he's not there, he's on the next one. Well, he wasn't on the next one, he was on the first one, and we'd never even considered that he could be there, so we just like, just stupidly, blatantly walked right over the top. And just like these things, he's literally strutting at same thing, like 15 yards, dude. And I just like whip the camera, and all of a sudden they all just take off running. I don't even think he ever knew what happened. He actually gobbled more after the fact. It was just ridiculous, dude. It was one of those ones where it was like, it was funny because Greg was like, oh man, I just don't like messing it up. I'm like, dude, that's actually just hilarious to me. Like, I mean, yeah, we messed it up, but it's like one of those ones where like all you can do is laugh at that. Like, just so ridiculous.
Yep. I know the exact video you're talking about. And I think a lot of it is, you know, like if I'm listening to this and I'm like, okay, well, what do you actually like take away from it? What do you do? You know, like, you're going to do that. You're going to blow stuff into the next county. But when you do that, like, really, like, take note of that situation. Like, rather than just being, like, pissed off, like everyone is, rather than sitting there, like, actually, like, think about why it happened and you know, like, what actually could you have done differently that would have, like, turned the tides a little bit.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it isn't rocket science. No. You know, it's just, like, the critters are out there, they're in those areas, and you're gonna end up bumping them. But when you do that, you know, stopping for a minute and really like evaluating the situation, I think that's where you can, you know, do a lot better for yourself and like start to understand, like, okay, maybe you put together a commonality or a theme that you're seeing in this, and I think that helps a lot.
Yeah. And it's like, again, the more you do it, the more you have confidence in it, right? And like, you're gonna be mad, you're gonna be frustrated, but like really breaking that down, and again, it's something that's one of the fun things about hunting with somebody else or just having hunting buddies in general. Call them after the hunt and just be like, hey, here's what happened, what's it sound like? You know, and sometimes there's going to be situations probably too where you're like lying to yourself, honestly, like you're in denial that you could have ever done anything wrong. So talk to your buddies about it. Don't hide your mistakes. Tell your buddies about them, because then they can learn about it too. Like, you know, honestly, after you said that about the bowl not being put down. It's like, that's the type of thing that, like, I'll be paying attention to. Like, it's going to go into my mind at some point. I guarantee at some point in my hunting career, your exact situation and your story will pop into my mind. And actually, here's one for you. This is not necessarily everybody's. Oh, by the way, episode 26 of the Turkey Tour 2019, if you want to watch Greg and Sean and I pop over the ridge on some turkeys, it's just ridiculous. But 2020, last year, another just silly taking a playoff, you know. We were in Tennessee, and like Keith and I had like kind of went in, scouted an area, and we'd walked like, it was exactly about 2 miles back this logging road. So it's like pretty easy hike. I mean, just on the road, but it got us up to a really high point where we could hear a lot. So we did that the night before. And this is, I can go into a few, like paying attention to small detail things here and like looking back some things I learned. So that night, we got up there and it was gray, it was cold and windy and rainy, but we wanted to go back there and just see if there was some sign. Ideally roost a turkey, but like weather just was not saying that a bird was going to gobble. So we walk up to the top of the ridge, we get up there, we're like, yeah, this is it, this is where we're coming to first thing in the morning. And actually, in one of Keith's pans from that evening, I learned this after the fact as I was editing this. I heard a squirrel barking, and I remember in the moment thinking, like, what else would a squirrel be, like, what is a squirrel barking at? Nothing in the woods is making noise. I'm talking nothing. There's no Tweety birds chirping. This is not a happy evening. It is gray, wet, cold, windy, and we're on top of the world. But this gray squirrel is just cutting it up, you know, he's making a racket. And I thought to myself in that moment, I wonder if he's barking at a turkey. And then I totally disregarded it. So the next morning we go in and we walk straight to the top of the ridge, get right to where we were, but not being conscious of how we were cresting the ridge, we popped up to the top and we're standing up on the top, moving around, starts getting daylight. I have to drop back because of nature calling me. You know what I'm saying? So I drop back.
Yep.
And as I'm back there, a bird gobbles. Well, I come running back up to Keith and Colin, and he never gobbled again. So that night, we go back, and I don't know, we were editing. I don't even think we hunted that evening. But we ended up going, or it ended up being a kind of a goofy day. Keith left that night and was replaced by his brother, Ben. Ben drove down, Keith drove home. Keith was finishing up school for the semester, and Ben took a few days to go to Tennessee, and then we went to Virginia from there. But ended up walking back to that same ridge top, and that next morning, I did the old creeping peek. You know, it was like sneaking up over that ridge, and as it's getting daylight, I'm creeping up there, and I'm looking down, really looking for a turkey, and boom, I spot him in the tree. We glass him, we're watching him, he starts gobbling, and I'll get to the rest of that story, but what I learned from, and this is just a not taking a playoff and paying attention to the small detail, attention to detail, or not taking a playoff, whatever you want to call it, is like, if I would have been more conscious of the fact that squirrel barked, it could have been an owl, it could have been a hawk, but like, turkeys will make squirrels bark. They're the only things that really make squirrel bark consistently are birds of prey, but also turkeys, because turkeys look like a bird of prey. As they make that wing flapping noise, squirrels freak out, man. Like they almost always bark at a turkey flying up or down if you really pay attention to it. Now, if I would have recognized that there was a good chance that there was a turkey there, I don't think we would have spooked him that next morning. So that first night we were in there, it was nasty, bad weather, squirrel barks. Thought about it being a squirrel or a turkey flying up for like 1 second, went in there the next morning. We were careless about being on that ridgetop. And I think he was right in that same spot. Yeah. And I think he saw me coming back from dropping back to the bathroom. And I look at that now and it's just like, man, if I'd have been really paying attention, it wouldn't have been that much more of a different approach. It just wouldn't have crested and just been messing around right on the crest of that ridge. And like,
right.
I just assumed we were going to hear a turkey way down in there and like have a hike to him, but he was right there. And there was sign to prove it. So that was mistake one, but we recover by spotting him in the tree the next day. And like, now we're set up, right? Like he's coming up to this high point. Like he's a lone gobbler in a tree. We're on top of the world. He's coming up here. And we kind of drop back, put some terrain between us and him, get to where like he basically has to come right up on the old logging road there in front of us. And this is where, like, you know, this probably wouldn't happen to everybody, but I mean, it could. I guess there's totally other gear that this could happen with. But I had a GoPro. We have those goofy gooseneck GoPro clamps. And, like, I had that puppy clamped on the gun right under the chamber. So when it was like close to the trigger guard. Well, when, you know, obviously when you're using a pump shotgun, you press the little tab there and that allows you to open the action. Well, that GoPro clamp was pressing against that. And we got set up. I have no idea that that's the case. I'm not aware of my surroundings. I clearly just like, I'm about to make this mistake, but I wasn't paying attention to that little detail. And call, bird eventually responds, and all of a sudden it's like, here he's coming. Sure enough, pops right into the road, 18 yards. We don't have a great setup, but like, I'm quick on the trigger, as well as you are, especially when it comes to turkeys. Like, as soon as I got ahead, I'm shooting, right? So, son steps into the road, and I'm like, all right, I gotta, like, I'm waiting for Ben to give me the go ahead, but like, I know we don't have much time. As soon as Ben says good, I pull the trigger and same thing, nothing happens. Like just like right through the triggers, just like it goes back, nothing, no click, no nothing. And I freak out and I just like, all of a sudden he's flying off the ridge and it's just like, I am realizing what's happened, but like, it's way too late now.
Yep.
And Ben has just driven all the way from Ohio to Tennessee, got there late, like, and like, we have the perfect opportunity and just completely blow it. And, you know, that's one of those things, man. The rest of the season, like, I knew exactly where that GoPro was at all times, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
And it's a silly one because it's like, you know, that may not happen to everybody, but that might be, I mean, maybe you have your gun rested on a log or something and you're pressing against that thing. Like, keep that. I mean, just, I'm going to appear to be telling the viewer, but I'm telling myself, pay attention to that stuff, man. Like, you can't, you're never going to get so good that you don't make a mistake, but you can get good enough that you're minimizing those every season and you're maximizing your opportunity.
Yep. And I think another thing right now, I mean, it's early February, you know, if I was trying to get better at this, I would be like, you know, spot and stalk rabbit hunting, you know, like that's something that you can do right now in the off season, or squirrel hunting.
Yep.
You know, they're like, a lot of people, I think, look at small game as like, and it definitely is. I mean, that's what it's all about, like getting out and having fun, just, you know, recreation. But if you want to switch up small game hunting, you can make it, you know, something that's a little bit more similar to, you know, turkey hunting or deer, elk hunting, whatever. You know, if you watch any, what made me think of this is watching Jake's video with Ted Miller, you know, and those brush piles right before you, like those rabbits bust out, you can see those things in there.
Yeah.
And like, if you want to try something, like try doing that right now. I know, like when I was a kid, my dad and I used to, you know, we had his like little 32-pound recurve bow.
Yep.
And like, we would kind of like take turns, like, you know, with that bow, you know, try to sneak up on a rabbit and shoot it. And you're not going to do that if the rabbit's flushed and running.
Right.
So a lot of it was like, you would have to, like, it was almost like a deer hunt. You'd have to spot the thing. You're looking for the little clump in amongst all the vertical slashes of saplings. You find them in there, you kind of work your way around where you can get close and get a hole, and then you try and slip an arrow in there, or, you know, shoot it with a 22. So
yeah,
lots of stuff.
If you if you maybe you've heard me talk about this before, I know you have, Eric, but like I spent an absurd amount of time hunting groundhogs when I was in high school, like so many hours of my life. And I think a lot of that has a lot of value too. You know, anything that you can be pursuing, and you can make hunting whatever you want it to be. I mean, you can go, for example, you can, if you want, you can buy property, put a food plot on there, and deer are probably going to walk out there and you can shoot them with a gun. Yeah, it's probably going to be pretty straightforward. You know, you can walk out and you could, you know, shoot rabbits in a stationary position from 80 yards out, or you could sneak up on them with a recurve. I mean, the options are endless for whatever you want to make it to be to add that challenge. And I think if you're bored with small game and you feel like it's something that isn't challenging you, just make it a different thing. It's that easy. I mean, you know, yeah. Go try to find them on public land. Go try to shoot them with something other than, you know, a shotgun, or, you know, plinking them with a 22 from way out. Like, nothing wrong with those things. Nothing wrong with those things. But if you want this extra challenge and you want to improve your skill set for when you're in, you know, more in your element, like deer, turkey, elk, whatever, big game hunting, you know, just practice makes perfect. And I started pronghorn hunting this past year, and talk about an opportunity to get better. I mean, pronghorn is a blast. It's a big, you know, it's big game, and you can start that well before in multiple states. There's over-the-counter options for pronghorn that you can start like August 15th. So, you know, if you want to make an early trip and do something, just get some practice in. I mean, and you got the time or whatever. It's an awesome example of practice. And it could be squirrels, though, rabbits, pheasants, whatever. Hunting is what you make it. And if you want an added challenge, you can generally just kind of make that up on your own. So,
right. Yeah. There's a million ways to skin the cat. I mean, that's the best thing about it. You know, the first rule is there's no rule.
Yeah, that's right. The other thing, you know, with like practicing is shooting your bow. Like we've talked about, you know, doing that in the yard and like how you can mix that up is like getting into different positions, shooting in different settings. Like, you know, maybe if you're shooting in the yard all the time, if you've got a place that you can put a deer target up in some trees, or you can maybe even get in like the vegetation around your house, like your landscaping, and just like crouch down and kind of shoot around that type of stuff. That's all of a sudden when you're like, whoa, like there's a lot more stabilizing muscles and stuff that I'm using to be steady when I'm down on my knees, or, you know, in a crouch position, or even just like leaning around something. That's a more realistic shot that you find in the woods. And like, that's when all of a sudden, like you said, that 33 yard shot that all day in a perfect controlled setting, you're never going to miss. But that's when all of a sudden 33 yards in the woods is just like, whoa, like sorted over him. Like I was not even in the ballpark because like, you're just not ready for that situation. And I think same thing goes for with a gun. You know, go shoot trap, go shoot 22s, go have little competitions with your buddy with your 22s. That's going to make you better for rifle season. I mean, I guarantee you just time behind your weapon is going to be good. Like Whitney and I and her brother Tim, we just went out and shot 22s last weekend, or 2 weekends ago, just for practice, just so you're getting that time behind the gun and you're like, and nothing fancy, not doing anything real crazy, just like plinking around and just getting comfortable. I think that type of stuff goes a long way.
Yeah, there's a bunch right there. I mean, another thing, like from an archery standpoint, when I worked at Gander Mountain, you know, whatever, retailer when I was in college and high school, I worked a little bit in archery department. And one thing that we always told people, like when they were like trying to come in and get fitted for a bow, is sit down in a chair, take your feet off the ground, and now try and draw that bow. Yeah. You know, if you can draw that thing with your feet off the ground, that means you're using the right muscles and you're at an appropriate draw weight. But if all of a sudden you're like, as soon as your feet are off the ground, you got to like sky draw it or do something crazy, you know, that's the last thing you want to be doing in a situation where you're kind of off balance or it's not perfect.
Yeah.
And then like on the 22 side, man, you know, like especially right now with ammo being so hard to find, you know, like for example, I've got deer hunt coming up this November. I'll be going out to Wyoming and Montana, so I really want to get my rifle like really dialed for that hunt. But what I'm doing right now is shooting my 22 way more than I normally do, to just kind of like execute trigger pulls and like, you know, spot impacts through the scope and whatnot. And if you can build those habits with something like a 22, that's going to carry over to your rifle.
Yeah, I mean, it's still shooting a gun. I mean, and I actually think it's so much better because, I mean, tough guy or not, and saying your recoil doesn't bother you, like, you have some sort of reaction to recoil. Like, everybody does. But if you make a habit of getting used to just, like, shooting a 22 that is not affecting you at all, then when you get behind a, you know, heavy hitter, it's going to, like, be way more now. You're gonna just have that muscle memory built in. That's the best way to put it. You're just muscle memory. Pulling the trigger is muscle memory, and you're following through in a way that you wouldn't get, I don't think, if you just like only shot your hunting rifle. And I mean, maybe you are a tough guy and you don't really are just like really good at shooting, but I am affected enough with a hunting rifle that like I don't love shooting them over and over, but I love shooting a 22. I'll shoot a 22 all day, every day.
Yeah,
shoot that 450. Like that thing doesn't kick that much. It's not like not like one. It's not like shooting a 12 gauge slug, but it's just enough that it's like, man, I don't really want to just sit here and just like put round after round after round through it if I don't have to. If my option is that or a 22, I'm shooting the 22. Because I think it creates better habits.
100%. I mean, it's the same thing like when, you know, you're buying your first bow as someone getting into archery. You know, you buy something that, you know, maybe you are capable of drawing 70 pounds, but when you set that thing up, you're going to, you know, reduce the weight as much as you can because you can always increase it, you know. And you're going to be able to build much better foundational habits of form and follow through. And you're also going to enjoy it more, so you're going to do it more.
Right.
And that's going to help you get better, get stronger, work in those archery muscles, and then hopefully, you know, up that poundage to whatever you want it to be at.
Yeah, or I mean, even me, I'm sitting here and I can draw all day 70 pounds. That's not an issue. But from the hunting standpoint, it's like, man, I'm more effective if I were to, I haven't done it yet, but I have another bow here that I'm going to, well, I actually have a couple recurves sitting over there that, I might be tapping into a little bit here, but, those are actually pretty low poundage. I was talking with, some people about it, and a lot of people recommend shooting a lower poundage than what you would even think. Like, you know, I was like, oh, 55 or 60 pound recurve, like easy, right? But a lot of people were like, I recommend 45 pounds, honestly. And like a lot of states, you have to be shooting at least 40 pounds. But like a lot of guys say, you know, starting lower poundage and just getting that form, and it's more than enough to kill a deer. It's just like, you know, you get in your head that I need to be slinging as much as possible. And like, same thing with the compound. I'm sitting here thinking like, man, like, I think I'm going to try to tone it back a hair just because I want to have that ability to just like hold it all day and just sit there. And if I need to wait 4.5 minutes, because think about it, how many times are you in the woods and it's like, man, if I'd have just drawn a long time ago and just been patient, he would have walked right here and I had a chipper. But it's like, you wait and you wait and you wait, and you're like, I don't want to draw too early and have to be holding that thing for 3 minutes. It's like, well, if you can't do that, then maybe, I mean, you're weighing your options, right? It's totally a one situation to the next type deal, you know. But
Yeah.
I mean, this day and age, these bows are so damn efficient. It's like, you might as well just right. shoot what's comfortable and what you can hold. Because again, I mean, I'm plenty capable of shooting 70 pounds, but do I need to? Or would I be better off and actually create more opportunity by shooting less, you know?
But, yeah. And that hold drill is another thing that's a perfect thing to be working on this time of year is like, you know, it's negative 100 degrees outside right now and the world is frozen. Mm-hmm. Like, throw a little, like, Reinhardt block or whatever, any, like, archery target in your house and, like, come to full draw, hold for, like, a minute and then or two and build that up. Like, you know, we started kind of talking about working out. That's another thing that you can see clear progress with that if you just start building it in. You record it and you start to monitor, like, okay, this week I was able to hold it steady at 60 seconds. And now next week I'm, you know, whatever, 75, 90, mm-hmm. 120. I mean, there's a lot like you can do to that's going to help, especially from a hunting standpoint.
Yeah, I'm very guilty. So one thing I was just thinking about this morning, I was doing push-ups and I was like, man, I definitely slacked this deer season on doing as many push-ups as I was doing like in season the last, you know, turkey and deer season. It's like, I just really wasn't as into it because like I can tell now that I've been doing them since deer season ended, you know, a month ago or whatever. It's like, man, yeah. I can just endlessly do push-ups. And it's like, I would relate drawing your bow to that same thing. It's like you do push-ups yep. for a month and like all of a sudden you're like, oh, I can just, I can do so much more than what I could comfortably, you know, and just having that control, having that, like those little stabilizer muscles that really like make it a controlled movement. Same thing with drawing your bow. If you don't shoot for 6 months and all of a sudden you go to wheel back that 70 pound bow, you're like, oh my God, I'm like ripping my shoulder off. But then by the end, by the time you're in season, you're just like so comfortable. It's like completely natural again. But you got to relearn that. You got to stay in shape. And if I'm guilty. I'm completely guilty. And actually, this whole recurve idea is just so I start shooting my bow, a bow, more frequently and keeping my muscles like in shape for it. My goal is to hunt with it if I can get good enough with it. But if I don't reach that goal, it's at least getting me shooting more, right? And then the following year, maybe I can, you know, dial it in a little bit more. But, you know, I want to get to where I just feel like I slack sometimes. I mean, I think we all go through phases of it. There's definitely been, dude, in those days that we're talking about Midwest Whitetail, when we're all living, you know, a house down from each other, we'd shoot every night.
Yep.
But when you don't have that necessarily, like, I mean, I don't know, we're cold winter, you know, you get out of it a little bit and, you know, just doing something new, I think motivates me a little bit. And I'm excited about it too, because the standpoint of like a new challenge. And I actually think it'll be something to be, ultimately more effective for the style of hunting that I like. And like I said, maybe I'll be there to where I can hunt with it next year. Maybe I won't. That's the goal
for sure.
But man, that whole recurve and like traditional idea, just the simplicity of it seems like a pretty fun thing. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, God, I know we both have watched a million Whitetail Adrenaline DVDs where, you know, Jared's shooting that thing from all these crazy angles. You're not doing that with a compass.
No, and that's where I'm at. Like, I see all of a sudden it dawned on me this year, mostly because of the range of shots that I've been getting and how they just keep getting closer and closer and closer and closer. Right. It's like, dude, at some point it's just like you're hip shooting these things. Like, I mean, dude, that buck in PA was 3 yards. Now, granted, I didn't make a perfect shot on him. I hit him off to the side just enough that it was one lung. Mm-hmm. I mean, one lung and much more going down through him, but it wasn't, you know, heart shot like I had intended. But, you know, 3 yards, I had that buck, if I'd had the bow on the right side of me, you know, he was like 6. And then the one the next day was like 5. The buck I shot in North Dakota was like 12 to 15. And, you know, when you're looking at that being the distance and just how much minimal movement is with the recurve, it's like, whew,
Yep. I don't know. And how natural it is too. I mean, a compound is valley, or you know, you're pulling all of a sudden, boom, yep. And then it pops back. You know, like it definitely can be done, a compound in a smooth motion, but like a recurve is all it is, you know.
Yep, and it's so. Yeah, I've been watching guys do it, and I'm like, man, I don't know. It just seems like something that could be, well, regardless of what it is, it's going to be fun. You know, that's the thing, is like just shooting a recurve and just having that, you know, ability to just shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot and, you know, see the improvement will be exciting. But I just feel like something about it, too, just feels like, it just feels right. It just looks right, man. I'm sitting here looking at that, and it's like, that's me.
Yep.
At some point, yeah, I know. At some point, I know that I'm gonna go full on with it. I'm hoping this fall I can get enough arrows, you know, repetition to just do it. So there it is. It's out there. I probably said that on a podcast at this point. I'm holding myself accountable is what I'm doing. I'm putting it out there live for the folks. That way people can be like, heck, hey, dude, man, you said you were gonna do it. So. You know, it's out there.
Heck yeah, dude. Sweet.
So what do you have planned for like turkey hunting coming up? You got any big plans this year?
So obviously we get quite a few tags in Wisconsin. That's always like a lot of fun. You know, I hunt with quite a few buddies around here and you know, that's just always a blast. Gonna try to draw it sounds weird drawing a tag in Wisconsin, but I'm going to try to draw that northern Wisconsin tag again. I did that last year and didn't kill one, but I did go up there 2 years ago and was able to shoot one up in way northern Wisconsin. That's a ton of fun. I mean, it's totally different than the southern part of the state. South Dakota, got a couple buddies at work that one in particular who hasn't gone on like an out-of-state trip yet, so that'll kind of be his first little like foray into that stuff. Yeah. So that'll be a ton of fun. And then, man, I'm just trying to like, I'm kind of playing it by ear. I would love to get back to the spot that I hunted in Missouri this past fall, but also like part of me, you know, if I'm going to travel for turkeys, I kind of want to go west just because it's a lot different experience than, you know, what you're getting in the Midwest. So it's for sure South Dakota, potentially either Missouri or potentially Nebraska, and then lots of Wisconsin. So.
Well, I can guarantee you I'll probably be in Missouri and Nebraska and probably Colorado, Wyoming, and Montana.
Nice.
Dude, I am in the same boat with you, like just doing something completely different. You know, I was looking at it and, you know, I mean, we've been talking about it as a group too, but like I was looking at it and I was like, man, I think I would like to go west right out of the gate in May. And I started talking with Aaron and he's thinking the same thing. So it's like, man, let's just do that. And like, you know, last year I hunted the east a lot and it was a lot of fun and I learned a ton, but it was like at the end of the season, by the end of the season, or by mid season, it was comfort zone. Like we were, no matter what state we were going, it was still Appalachia and it was like what we knew.
Right.
And you know, I've been thinking about it more and more. It's like, man, I really haven't hunted Merriam's very much. And like the one Rio hunt that we had in Oklahoma, like we made a lot of mistakes and we almost didn't get one. And we did at the very end.
Right.
But like we almost didn't. And I think that, you know, it's time to get out of the comfort zone a little bit and try something different. And I'm sure we'll have some successes. I'm sure we'll have some failures, but it's just that like there's always a draw to me about doing something new and just feeling uncomfortable and thinking like, are we going to get one? You know?
Right. That's what, man. Dude, two years ago, I think it was two years ago. I hunted North Idaho for, black bears.
Yes.
And we were there the first week in June and it was like right after their turkey season had ended. And spring bear hunting, that's a whole nother thing. Like that was a ton of fun in and of itself. But we did that hunt on like e-bikes. So we biked like 18 miles in on those crazy things. And you know, we were just riding Forest Service roads and getting way, way, way back in. And all of a sudden, we started hearing turkeys gobbling up there. And that was, like, that was super cool. Like, that made me, like, right away, I'm dropping pins. You know, we're in the heart of, like, bear and elk country, and I'm dropping pins for turkeys. That's like, sweet, I got to get back here and do that.
That's cool.
Because it would be, yeah, that was some super cool country, super cool, like, just experience, I guess. Definitely, like, not your traditional. I would compare it to, like, anyone who spent time in northern Minnesota or northern Wisconsin, like, same kind of tree cover and same kind of habitat, but, like, way, way, way steeper.
Yeah, like,
obviously. Like 45 degree angle.
The steepest. Colin Miller, you know, my buddy, the other long-haired man, he went to Idaho last year filming a spring bear hunt. And he, with just like a buddy that had got a tag, and he said it was like insanely steep. He was like, it really threw me off how steep Idaho was.
I've never seen anything like it. There were places where, like, you know, if we would have shot a bear, I honestly don't know like what we would have done. Uh-huh. Like, it would have been insane.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah,
that's another thing though that's definitely on my radar. Like something would have to come right out of left field for it to happen this spring. But, like, I definitely want to dabble with that more, like the spring bear stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. Like, it's, you know, I've never killed a bear before. But just being out in those kind of places is super cool. And, like, the hunting style is like, way different than I guess I thought it would be. You know, like, I figured it'd kind of just be, like, oh, you're going to find them on bait. And I mean, we weren't hunting bait. We were hunting like clear cuts and stuff. I mean, it was just like you would expect a deer or an elk hunt to be, you know, with a lot of the same variables in there. So it was cool.
Isn't it funny how when you really break it down, you almost always are finding all the game in about the same spots? Like, I always think it's so hilarious. Like, if you see grouse when you're turkey hunting, you're probably close to a turkey if you're seeing even whippoorwills, man. Like, if you read about like where a whippoorwill lives, a grouse lives, and a turkey lives, they're all about the same thing. Like, all kind of like that, like early successional habitat and diversity too. But it's funny how like it just goes hand in hand. Like, deer, same way. Turkey, same way. Elk, same way. Bear, whatever. It's like diversity is just the king out there. And I mean, it's everything wants different stuff in their diet, but I mean, that hell, that's a whole rabbit hole we could go down. But
I think
we'll wrap this one up, man. I think it was, you know, a lot of information there. That's just like the little things, you know, and that's usually what experience teaches you and then starts to make you really improve, is just focusing on those little things. At least, you know, you and I believe that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, none of this stuff happens overnight. Like, it's one of those deals where, like, I'm sure here we'll be sitting a year from now talking about the same, you know, something new that we messed up or whatever.
Absolutely, so, if,
like,
we're not.
Like, it's inevitable.
Yeah. If we're not, then we did everything right, and then that's no fun, but that's never going to be the case.
Exactly.
Cool. All right, man.
Exactly, man.
Well, thanks for jumping on here, and we'll go ahead and sign this one off. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks, dude.